You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 21 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by Your Button Guy. Your Button Guy for all of your one-inch button and magnet needs. Check him out on Instagram at Your Button Guy or directly email him at yourbuttonguy@gmail.com. Your Button Guy prides himself on customer service, quick turnarounds, and top-notch quality. So if you're in the market for some one-inch buttons or some magnets, make sure to check out Your Button Guy. Hello and welcome to episode number 21 of That One Time on Tour. As always, I am your host, Chris Swinney. Thank you guys for coming back. Last week's episode was really cool with my buddy Jonathan Newby from the band Brazil. And this week is just as cool. I get to sit down with Johnny P-Bucks Bonnell from the Swinging Udders. Awesome Fat Records band. I've been listening to the Swinging Udders since I was about 17, 18 years old. You know, now with the internet, you can find things so easily. But back then, you know, you would get these compilation discs from the record labels that you liked, and they had a song from all of their bands, and you would just fall in love with the bands. And that's what happened with me and the Swinging Udders. I've been a fan for a very long time. So getting to chat with Johnny was a big thrill for me. And we talk about a lot of stuff. I think you guys are really going to enjoy the conversation. Before I jump into that, I do want to tell you about Muncie Music Center, one of our sponsors. I work there. I teach guitar, mandolin, banjo, ukulele. If it has strings, I teach it. So make sure if you are local to Muncie, Indiana, you check out Muncie Music Center at 600 South Mulberry Street in downtown Muncie. If you are not local, you can go to MuncieMusic.com and check that out. They have a recording studio. They're an amazing store. So go support them, and I'll appreciate it if you support them, and they'll appreciate it as well. Also, make sure to check out Rockabilia.com. They came on as a sponsor a while back. They are a wonderful company. They have over 500,000 unique items, and all of the items are officially licensed by the bands. So if you need anything at all, go to Rockabilia.com and at checkout, put in the promo code PCTOTOT to save 15% on your entire order. Okay, make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms, TOTOT Podcast. If you want to become a sponsor, get in touch, TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. If you want to leave us some love, some hate, tell us a story, whatever, call the TOTOT hotline at 1-765-372-8818. So that's it. We're going to jump right into my conversation with Johnny P-Bucks Bonnell from the Swinging Udders. Here we go. Hey, Johnny, what's going on, man?
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
It's going really well. I'm excited to have you on the podcast. I've been an avid listener of the Swinging Udders since 1998, so it's been a long time.
Jesus Christ. Must be old.
I'll be 40 in October, so yeah, I'm getting up there. I got five lessons learned, the summer after I graduated high school, maybe. That was my first introduction into you guys, and I've been a fan ever since, so I'm pretty excited to have you on the show. I appreciate your time.
Oh, no, I appreciate the interest, and thank you for the kind words.
Definitely. I wanted to talk a little bit. I was talking to my buddy Adam the other day. He's a big fan as well, and we were talking about Five Lessons Learned, and both of our favorite songs is Untitled 21, so that's a great song. I still listen to that all the time, so I appreciate the art.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah, we play that every so often, so... Maybe next time I see you, we'll play for it.
Oh, that'd be great, man. I really appreciate that. So what I want to talk to you about, you know, I know there's a new record coming out. We're going to get to all of that. But, being out there in California, growing up, I'm always interested as to what kind of drives people to get into punk rock. Like when you were young and you were getting into music, what was your first introductory into the genre?
It was probably during high school, and I had friends that were into the same type of music I was into, and we started to go to shows in Santa Cruz where I grew up, and that's pretty much got me into it. My brother was the first one that got me into music originally. He's an older brother, and he was just buying everything that was coming out at the time, so I got my first taste of the Specials and the Clash and the Sex Pistols as they were coming out in the 70s. And he sort of fueled my fire for the desire to play punk and to follow it and see shows and stuff like that.
Were you in a lot of bands before the Swingin' Utters? I mean, I know I talked to a lot of people and like, oh, I was in like 90 bands and then I got signed. Or some people, their first band gets signed. Like, what was your trajectory from getting into punk rock and starting to play in bands? Like, how did it go about?
It was our first band. Greg, the drummer, and was looking to start a band. Greg McEntee, the original drummer, and we were friends at the time, so I said I was interested in singing, and we got Kevin, our bass player, and then another friend, Eric, and it was the first incarnation of the Swingin' Utters, and it was first called Johnny Peabucks and the Swingin' Utters. And what we did was mainly do covers. Swingin' Utters is my first band.
So Swingin' Utters was your first band. I guess we can go a little bit further into, you know, what I know from Fat Records. I was in a band called the Ataris, and we did some stuff with Fat Records back in the day. And I know a lot of bands that are on the label. How was it with you guys signing to Fat? Like, did Mike come after you guys, or did he see you guys play? Like, what was the process for that?
Max Huber, our guitar player back then, when we got signed, he was the main guy that was sort of talking to Fat Mike and becoming friends with a lot of other people within the scene and stuff around that time. And so he was sort of instrumental in getting us signed to Fat. Mike started showing up at our shows, and he really liked that a lot of our shows got shut down because of fights.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's something about, yeah, he doesn't like just a regular band that just, you know, puts on a good show or whatever. He looks for some kind of interesting flaw or something like that,
yeah,
with the band. And we definitely had our fair share of shutdown shows because of fights. And that's just part of what happens. I don't know. It's, we're kind of unlucky that way, but, That was back in the 90s. So
was the scene where you guys were playing back then fairly violent? Kind of like, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, Henry Rollins and the Black Flag stuff. I've read all of his books, and he talks about how violent that scene was back in the 80s. How was the scene in the 90s for you guys?
Yeah, not nearly as violent as it was back then. That seemed pretty scary back then. This was kind of just like little scuffles here and there.
Okay.
In the front row. Yeah, nothing too severe, but enough to shut down a Gilman show. So
yeah,
you know, so that it wasn't nearly as violent as back then. That seemed really scary to me, hearing stories.
Yeah, did you ever get like a cup of piss poured on you?
No, it's never happened.
Yeah, man, I read those books and I check all that stuff out, and like, man, I mean, I'm a pretty tough guy, but if I went to England and all that stuff was happening, I'd probably never go back.
Yeah, exactly. It seems a lot. There seemed to be a lot of pushback during, you know, because it was such a new and ugly thing.
Yeah.
To like conservative people, so yeah, there probably was a lot of run-ins with jocks and stuff like that, just trying to beat the shit out of you just for the way you look.
Oh yeah. So when you guys were playing those shows, Mike was coming out to the shows, you finally, you know, signed with Fat. How was that process like exciting? Were you guys wanting to kind of, you know, sign to a decent sized label? I mean, I know back then maybe the label wasn't as big as they had gotten later on, but was it an exciting time for the band?
Yeah, for sure, because it's like, you know, first thing for you. I mean, we were signed to smaller labels before that, put out some releases. But yeah, Fat was pretty heavy hitters in the Bay Area, so it was definitely an exciting time. And NoFX was pretty big then, and huge now, but big back then. And, you know, Mike's kind of a celebrity, you know.
Yeah.
Him showing up at our shows. So yeah, it was exciting and a super, like, rememberable time.
That's awesome. So what I'd like to talk to you about then is, you guys just, I think last year celebrated your 30th anniversary as a band. Can you maybe, I know this is probably an open-ended question, but is there a secret? I mean, you know, I've been in a bunch of bands. All my friends have been in a bunch of bands. I know you guys have had lineup changes, but 30 years as a band, that's a big milestone. Like, do you have any secrets you can share with my listeners?
I don't know if there's a secret. It's more just like knowing how lucky you are to be able to be in a band and travel and stuff. And, try to have positive attitude when you go out on tour, because complaining on tour doesn't help anything, just makes matters worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably escalates into fights because you're in a van for a long time and you're with the same people for a long time. So I think just appreciating the fact that you're able to do this as a human. So you got to realize that you're a lucky person.
Yeah, and I know you guys are very well liked and respected among your peer group. I mean, I know back in 2010, there was actually like a tribute covers record that like Dropkick was on, Fucked Up, and a bunch of other bands. So like, how does that feel? I mean, you guys are so respected in the scene. Does that make you feel good?
Oh, God, yeah, it's amazing. I was so surprised that my friend Matt, who plays guitar in another band I'm in, the Drug Lords of the Avenues, he's the one that sort of instigated that tribute album. He's all, no one's doing it, man, and there's so many bands out there that like you guys. Let me put this tribute record out. And I was like, hey, it's a tribute record to us. I'm not going to, you know, say no to it. So, yeah. Yeah, go with it. So he him and Toby from Red Scare sort of got most of the bands to join in, and yeah, it was, it's unbelievable. It's truly, we're incredibly lucky to be in a band that has even a tribute album. I don't even care who's on the tribute album. It's a tribute album. That's amazing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's so cool that you guys are so respected and so well-liked, you know, in a genre like, you know, punk rock sort of genre, a lot of the times bands get bad reputations or they act a certain way. And I've never heard anything but positive, wonderful, like, stuff about you guys. So it's kind of a rare thing to have, especially in this genre. So that's really, really cool, man. I love the tribute record. I think it's great. And I mean, you guys are an amazing band, and I think everybody's kind of, you know, taken note of that, and everybody knows it. So.
Yeah, man, Chris, I really appreciate that. That's super nice of you to say.
Well, it's totally true, man.
I don't take it for granted. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, yeah, and I think that goes back to what you were saying before of like being on the road and knowing how lucky you are. And I mean, there is a lot of hard work that goes into it, but sometimes it's, you know, there's a lot of bands that work really hard and they don't get a tour and they don't get to do all this stuff. So not taking things for granted, I think, is a really, really good thing to give out into the world and let bands know. Because today with bands, you know, I'm going to put my album up on iTunes and then, you know, maybe I'll get like, nobody understands. Like, I know you guys slept on floors and probably didn't eat for days on end. And I mean, back in the day, it was a little bit harder to work for what you wanted. You know what I mean?
For sure. And then before us too, it was probably even harder. So
yeah.
It's just having that empathetic mindset, I think is probably the best way to have longevity in a band.
Well, that's awesome, man. So the new record is coming out. It's called Peace and Love. It's actually coming out on August 31st, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And it's your 9th full length. How does it feel to know that you have 9 full length records out? That's got to be a good feeling.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I didn't even realize it was 9. I thought it was more. I don't really keep track.
Well, I think I was doing some research, and I think it's the ninth actual full length, but you guys have a lot of other like 7 inches and EPs and whatnot. But yeah, I believe it's the ninth full length. I could be wrong, but that's my count. So
yeah, that makes sense. I'm probably taking into consideration the EPs and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you guys recorded with Chris Dugan, who, I mean, the guy's done Green Day. I mean, oh my gosh, he's done Iggy Pop. That's amazing. How was it working with him? Did you guys enjoy that process?
Yeah, Chris is great. He sort of gets us. He's probably the first engineer / producer that's got us and captured us the way we wanted to. Not that in the past we were disappointed with our recordings, but it just seems we're more appreciative of someone that knows what we're talking about or knows where we're heading or just sort of gets what we're trying to tell him what we're trying to sound like. I don't know. It's kind of like it's kind of a difficult thing. Chris is really understanding it, and it sort of helps out in the process and the recording process with a man like that.
So he probably got like all of your references, like, you know, hey, I want my drums to sound like this, or like, because I know that when I've been in the studio before, some of the best times that I've been in the studio, we did this kind of referencing thing where like the producer would say, hey, what do you want the drums to sound like? Bring me a CD of a band that you like, you know, and you'd go through that. So it always does help if the producer is kind of on the same page as you. And I take it that's how it was with Chris.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think we came in with CDs or music samples of what we wanted to sound like. He just sort of knew. I mean, he's recorded Toy Guitar, which is Jack's band, and we recorded our last record. So he sort of has an idea of what we're looking for in a lot of our songs. And if anything's a little different or wacky, it's easy to explain to him because he's been there, done that, you know?
Man, I really enjoy the new record. Vanessa over at Fat, you know, shout out to Vanessa. She sent me an advanced copy of the record. And what I really liked about it, and I want to cite two songs in particular, but you guys have always, you guys have always had that Swingin' Utters sound, but you guys have kind of delved into other genres and things kind of get different once in a while. But on this record, a lot of the songs, I mean, they're quite different. Like ECT, love that song. I think it's kind of, I'm sure you guys meant for this to kind of be that way, but it reminds me a lot of the Ramones.
Yeah, for sure. Darius was going for a Ramones song.
And then, you go from a song like ECT then to a song like Seeds of Satisfaction, which is completely different than ECT. And I love that because the record for me, it kind of takes me on a journey. Like it's not... Some punk bands, when you listen to them, you could just play any track and you wouldn't know it from the other track. And on this record, I really like that there's peaks and valleys. And could you talk a little bit about the writing process for songs like that?
Yeah, a lot of it is sort of a conscious effort, I guess. I wrote a few of the songs that are quite different than what Swingin' Utters normally play. Like I did Sleeping and Dubstep and... Research Spider, and all those songs I wrote by myself for the first time. So on past records, it was usually a collaboration with another band member. But these were just done with me and the guitar. And I sort of was going for something, that no Swingin' Utters fans ever heard before. And then Darius chipped in with a lot of his songs that were, different for him as well. So It sort of just came out that way, and I really like the way it turned out. Though it is very different, and that's what I appreciate the most about the recording.
Do you, when you guys were like writing this record or any of the other records, do you write a lot of songs, like more songs than you need, and then kind of choose the ones you want for the record, or do you guys just like, okay, 12 songs, we're gonna write 12 songs? How does that go?
We went in with the idea of having like 16 to 18 songs. So you have a full length plus a couple extras for singles or an EP. And on this record, me and Darius sort of had an abundance of songs. So we just came in each practice and I'd do one, and then the next practice he would do one until we got to about 17 songs. And then Yeah, but we were pretty pressed for time. It was like we only had like a week of practice before we went into the studio.
Can you speak a little bit about this upcoming tour that you guys coming out? Like, who are you guys touring with, and what part of the country are you guys going to be hitting?
I think it's with Kevin Seconds, and it's the West Coast, pretty much. It goes inland a little bit, but it's pretty much a Northwest, West Coast. It's Kevin Seconds and Austin Society is the other band. I'm sort of lost on on who's on the tours because there's so many in a row, and I know the Last Gang's on some Canadian dates. And that's after this Northwest tour. So I don't even know what the East Coast tour has in mind. I don't know who's on it, or I mean, I know it's getting booked, but a lot of times we can't figure out who we're going with until the last minute. So as soon as I find out, I guess it'll get posted. But
how is touring for you? I know we had to reschedule this this interview, so because you said you had to work. Like, how is touring? Do you does everybody in the band kind of have other gigs that they're doing when they're at home? Like, how does that work out?
Yeah, we pretty much all got jobs when we come back. We've been lucky enough to have either self-employed or working with employees that are cool enough to let us go for a couple weeks out here and there. We all have to like set aside time and tell our bosses that we're checking out for a couple weeks. And, but they're usually cool with it. And, we managed to work our way this far with it. So I guess till death.
Yeah. Right. So, what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about is, this is called That One Time on Tour. So we like to get pretty deep into some tour stories. I know you guys did part of the Fat Records tour, like a couple years ago, like the 25th anniversary tour. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Did anything crazy happen on that tour? Do you have any like tidbits or little stories you could maybe share with us?
God, man, I don't think anything crazy nothing happened. We're older people. It's like,
yeah,
all the crazy stuff happened back when we were, you know, in our 20s and stuff. I don't know. It's not really that exciting backstage anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's cool. It's cool to hang out with all the other bands, of course. They're really nice dudes and ladies. And, we've had good times, but nothing crazy, man. It's just not crazy anymore. I don't know. It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Could you tell me maybe something that sticks out in your mind from back in the day when you were touring, when things were a little bit crazier, that maybe would be interesting, like, or funny? Like, I had so many crazy stories, and I know you probably do as well. I'd just like to hear about kind of what the whole vibe was like back in the day when you guys first started touring.
Drunken mess when we first started, because, I mean, that's all we would do is drink, and I've done some pretty nasty things back in the day, but apologize for it. But I don't know, man. There was a time when we went out, and this one guy, we were staying at this one guy's house, and we were drinking over at his place. And he didn't like me that much, but he thought I liked Black Flag, probably because I looked like Henry Rollins a little bit. And back then I had a shaved head, so I looked even more like him. And he put on Black Flag, and at the time I was really against Black Flag, and I was just against him, but I ejected his tape immediately and threw it across the room, and he just stared at me for like, I don't know, it must seem like a half hour. I was just like being stared at by this guy not that far away from me and just feeling super uncomfortable, and I was wasted, and I tried to get out this window out onto their deck and cut my head on the window, and I was bleeding everywhere. And then I ended up, I mean, this is blackout stage. So this is what I've heard from what the other band members told me what I did. They said I went out into the street and started crying, saying I wanted to go home. I wanted to go home. And I was like looking up at the sky, just saying, please take me home. And then Kevin, our bass player, and one of my best friends, took me and took care of me in the back of the pickup truck that we were traveling in. And he said I was just violently lashing out every once in a while in my sleep and kicking the edge of the truck bed. And one time I went back to kick something and my leg got caught around Kevin's head. And he was just like, Johnny, stop, stop. I was trying to keep kicking, but it was just like wrapped around his neck almost. And it was just a mess. I mean, I was in a really bad state on these first tours. I was a crazy alcoholic and I'd black out, you know, every show almost. I mean, we had amazing shows, but it's no fun if you're blacking out and you know, just making everyone else miserable around you. So
did you guys, you guys have traveled overseas, correct? Have you guys like toured the UK or Europe or anywhere like that?
Yeah, we've done that a few times.
How were you guys received over there? Was it pretty good?
Well, the first time I went over there was with Rancid. So, and it was right when they were blowing up. So it was crazy. It was insanity. We thought like, we thought this was the way it's going to go.
Yeah.
Like eventually Rancid would be bigger and bigger. And then we'd be like satisfied at Rancid's, like their stage when they were just getting big. Like we thought that was amazing because there were still club shows, but they were all sold out and the fans would go berserk. They'd be lifting the gates up, tearing them out of the floors. And, it was a crazy, crazy tour. And, it was right during Rancid's hype. I think Outcome the Wolves just came out. So it was that tour and it was our first time in Europe. So it went amazing. The fans were great.
You guys actually worked with Lars from Rancid back in the day, correct? On one of your records?
Yeah, he produced Streets of San Francisco.
How was it working with him? I mean, I would think that it would be awesome. I mean, I love Rancid as much as I love you guys, but I just, how was it working with him? And are you guys still friends? You guys still like talk all the time or?
No, we don't talk all the time. We're still friends as far as I know. I mean, I got nothing but nice words to say. I mean, it was great. I mean, it's cool to have a producer that sort of knows who you are and is a fan of your band. I mean, he was an actual fan of the Swingers, so I think that's kind of important as well. So he made the recording process a little bit more fun, for me at least. I mean, the gang vocal parts in a lot of the songs were really memorable. Such a good time. It's a lot of joking around and stuff. But I always remember doing the gang vocals with Lars. It was a whole lot of fun.
That's awesome, man. Well, what I would like to ask you as well, I talk about this quite a bit as well. A big movie that really touched me was this documentary called The Other F Word, where it's about punk rock musicians that are becoming fathers. And I myself have a 2.5-year-old son and a 10-month-old daughter. And it changed my whole life, man. And I know that originally when we were trying to set this up with Vanessa, you were taking your daughter to college, I believe. So how has it been for you, you know? I guess it's been a long time since she's going to college, but how did it affect the way that you kind of, you know, tour and do things with music? And I don't know, I just want to get your thoughts on kind of being a father and being a punk rock musician, because I'm very interested because I'm the same way.
Yeah, man, I'm super lucky. I have the greatest wife. I mean, my wife put up with all my shit through those blackout stages too. So she's a saint and, I'm super lucky to still have her, and she's, you know, she's supported me from the beginning. So, there's no way there would be a Swingin' Otis without my wife. So, that's one thing I wanted to say right off the bat, but also my daughters are turning out great. And, I've learned so much about myself having these daughters and just not doing the same mistakes as my parents did. Not that they made tons of mistakes, but it's kind of easy when you just like dedicate your life to them. Like every move that I make now in life is dedicated to them. It's is for them. You know what I mean? It's like anything for them. I want them to be happy, and I don't want to argue with them ever. Of course, arguments will happen in life, but I just think that it's unnecessary when you're raising kids. I just think that they need tons of love, and it's really easy to give your daughters love. It's just the simplest thing. And I've just learned that if I go through life, just making sure that they're happy, alive, successful, then I'm happy. So that's every step that I make is for them.
How did they feel growing up? Or you might not even know this, but like with their dad being in, you know, a nice sized punk band, like touring and doing things, like how did they think it was really cool that dad was like this, you know, quote unquote rock star? How did they feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, they're not really into the music. So that's one thing. So that, but yeah, it's, I don't know if they're proud, but they kind of trip out on the fact that, that I'm in a band and still, you know, at the age of 51, still doing it. Yeah. It's kind of funny, but, I don't know. They don't really trip on it. They're just pretty much, living their lives, and I don't know. As far as I know, they don't really trip on it that much.
That's cool. I think it'd be cool if my dad was in the Swinging Utters. I'll just give you that right now. Okay. So, like I said, you guys have been a band for, 30 years last year. So I guess 31 years this year. I know you guys took a small hiatus there for a while, like a 7-8 year hiatus. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was for pretty much for my daughters. They were at an age where I was like, I need to be home for them. So no touring.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do local stuff, but, and keep recording, but, yeah, I need to be around for this part of their lives. But so that was mainly my decision. I think, out of all the band members, it was me that said that, I think.
So you guys, like I said, you've been together for almost, 31 years. You took a small time off, but the band never kind of went away. How long do you see this going? I mean, I know that's a hard question, but like, can you see yourself? I think you're in your late 40s, early 50s right now?
Yeah, I'm 51.
51. Okay. So do you see yourself like putting out a new Utters record when you're 60? Like, I mean, I'd love to see it go on forever, but like, what do you realistically in your mind, or have you ever even thought about that?
Yeah, I don't really think about that. It's such a small thing. I don't sweat the small stuff. I'll just go until I get tired of it. I just don't tire of it. And, there's a lot of blues players that played in their 60s and 70s. You know, music can go on forever. So it's I don't know what's going to happen when I'm that age. But I'm just not going to worry about it. I'm just going to just keep plugging along. There's no way to tell what's going to happen in the future. I'm going to try to win the lottery or something.
That's cool. So I also, I follow you on Instagram and I see all the art that you do. So, could you speak a little bit about that? And does it kind of fulfill the same thing that the music does, or do you see it as two separate entities, or is it one kind of big thing altogether?
I think they influence each other. Yeah, totally. Cause I do a lot of the album art and, I listen to the music while I'm drawing and stuff, just to get some ideas, but yeah, they sort of influence each other. It's therapeutic for me, both of them, music and art. It's time alone, and you can get pretty crazy in your own brain when you're drawing. But I like to try to shock people with sort of ordinary looking drawings. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I try to make it so the perspective is one that you probably would never see before.
Okay. So you, as you were mentioning earlier, I don't know if it was on the podcast or when we were talking before I started recording, but you do the t-shirts, you print the t-shirts for the Utters. Do you do all the merch for the Utters?
I do if I can. If it's the Canadian tour, I think we have to get them printed up there. I think we shipped, but it was too expensive to ship them up. So, yeah, I try to do all the merch. You know, not all of it. If there's, I can't do certain things. But yeah, that's just part of my job. And it's printing shirts to me is kind of gratifying because you get art. You know, right there every swipe. So, and I mean, you can get tired of seeing the same image over and over. But I tend not to. I don't know, something about it that. It's also kind of meditative as well because it's you get into this like, sort of a machine state and you just sort of get the ball rolling and printing to me is really gratifying for some reason. I know a lot of printers and they don't feel the same way. I know that.
Did you get the bug for that or kind of learn how to do it? I know I did a lot of research before I got on the phone with you. And I saw that you'd actually worked at Cinderblock, which I don't know if a lot of my listeners know what Cinderblock is, but it was kind of like the merch company. They did all the Fat Record stuff. They did a lot of other things. So did that influence what you're doing now?
Yeah, but even before that, I was printing, not well, but I was printing. And Cinderblock taught me all the ins and outs of screen printing, so... Yeah, I was there for a while, and I almost did every position there, you know, all the labor positions. I got to learn a lot and worked with a lot of cool people and, you know, lifelong friends. And, Cinder and Jeffrey from Tilt, they were their owners. And, big shout out to them, man. They've helped me out immensely because they let me go out on tour during that time. And then come back and keep working. So
I remember when I was younger, and I would, you know, you didn't used to be able to get cool shirts really cheap on the internet. You'd have to like do mail order. And I always had the Cinderblock like catalog, and I'd always know I get that shirt and it's got the little Cinderblock tag on it that it was going to be a great shirt. So you probably printed some of the shirts that I have.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that very well be true.
That's awesome. Okay, so one last thing that I want to ask you about, and this is just because I love this record and I love this whole series, but Fat Records has done the Live in a Dive series where they put out live records by all their bands. You guys released your Live in a Dive in 2004. How did that go? Was it, you know, like, how was the recording process live? Was it like, just how was it for you guys?
It's just like a normal show. They just say that they're recording it.
Yeah.
And then you just forget that they're recording it. But as far as I was concerned, I forgot all about it. And then we had to go back into the studio and fix some flubs that were kind of, you know, evident that they need to be fixed.
Yeah.
I still don't like that idea, but I think most bands do that. To their live records.
I think they do. Yeah. There was this,
just so it's listenable.
There was this band that I played and you might've heard of the band. I don't know if I should be talking about this or not, but it's pretty funny. But there was a band that I played in back when I was like 20 years old called the Migraines. You ever heard of that? They were on some label out in California. I think 1 Foot Records. I don't think it exists anymore, but, we did a live record and, when they edited everything and did everything in the studio, they took an audience like crowd noise from a Kiss record and put that as the crowd.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, and they didn't make it blatantly like, oh, we're playing an arena. Like they just used the actual kind of white noise, crowd noise to mix it in to make it sound like there were people there. But it was pretty funny because I think it was CBGB's and it was like a Tuesday night with like 20 people there. But on the record, it sounded like there was like 1,000 people.
That's awesome.
It was pretty good.
So, good.
So shout out to Sean, my buddy from the Migraines. He'll probably get a kick out of it that I mentioned that on this episode.
That's good stuff.
Well, hey, man, I just want to tell you this has been a pleasure chatting with you. I love your band. I hope you guys never stop. The new record is amazing. I've been listening to it nonstop in my car every day on my commute to work. And I just think you're a great guy, Johnny. And I love the fact you came on the show. And hopefully maybe in the future I can have you back for a part two, man.
Wow, right on, Chris, man. It was a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate all the nice words, man.
Yeah, but I'll make sure to, you know, post the tour dates on our Facebook and everything and blow you guys up on our side as much as possible. But everybody needs to go get Peace and Love out August 31st. It is a great record. So thank you, Johnny, so much. I appreciate it, and have a great tour. And I'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Take care, man.
Bye. And there it was, my conversation with Johnny Bonnell from the Swinging Udders. Huge shout out to Vanessa at Fat Records for hooking that up. I had a great time talking to Johnny, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure to pick up their new record, Peace and Love, out August 31st on Fat Records. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it anywhere. Just make sure that you pick it up. It's a great record. Next week on the podcast, I have Mr. Stephen Egerton from The Descendants. I had a wonderful time. I got to go down and hang out with the band when they were playing their show in Indianapolis a couple days ago. And the hospitality was wonderful. They could not have been more gracious, and it was a great time. So big ups to The Descendants, man. I had a great time with you guys. That is next week, so make sure that you come back for that. I'm not sure, Tuesday, Wednesday, I've been releasing these things on different days, but it's always the week after. I'm not going to wait a couple weeks unless something bad happens. So come back next week for Stefan's episode. Make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms, TOTOT Podcast. If you want to be a sponsor, get in touch. It's TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. Call the TOTOT hotline, leave me a message. That is 1-765-372-8818. So I'm going to leave you with a couple Swinging Udders songs. I'm going to leave you with ECT off their new record. And then right after that, I'm going to play Untitled 21, which is one of my favorite songs that they've ever done. So thank you guys so much for the support. It means so much to me that you guys are listening, and the show just keeps growing week in and week out. It's just getting bigger and bigger. So please tell a friend, tell a loved one. Let's blow this thing up. So here it is. I'm going to play ECT by the Swinging Udders. This is off their new record, Peace and Love, out August 31st. And then I'm going to play my favorite song, which is Untitled 21. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot. This is Chris. I'm out. Don't suit me. Hey, everybody, this is Chris. I don't know if you're still listening, but I was doing some stuff on my computer while I was editing this, and there's no way I'm not going to play this other song, which is another swingy other song that I really love. It's called I Follow. So back to what you were doing. Check it out. Here it is, I Follow. See you guys next week with Stefan from The Descendants. Thanks.
I'll find you. Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.